Okay, welcome back to podcasting for the second half of 2012. Joining me today is Kent, our curator.
Hello.
Jessica, our collections officer.
Hello.
And Andrew, our manager.
Hi.
First up today, we're going to be talking about the latest exhibition in the museum space titled Built for the Bush, The Green Architecture of Rural Australia. This exhibition comes to us from the Historic Houses Trust and explores some of the energy efficient strategies that were once practiced, particularly in rural architecture, and actually reappearing in contemporary sustainable architecture today. So, Andrew, we'll start with you. A comment from Chris Reardon, who's an environmental architect. It features in the exhibition. He has stated that sustainable design is not a recent concept, it is a lost one. How and why did we lose sight of what was working within rural Australian architecture?
I think if I could answer it in one word, it's probably going to be money. It was simply cheaper to produce things that are, I suppose, mass designed in some sort of architectural factory somewhere else. And you can see this, it's not just in rural Australia, but in all over the country. We have, in a very sense, I think maybe from the 50s onwards, we lost the idea that our spaces should be individually designed for the place and for the people that are going to use them. And it became very much I will simply take sort of off the rack whatever is available for me. I went to school in Lismore, in a school that was a series of sort of rectangular blocks with little courtyards in the middle. There was four or five of them. And that design is repeated all over the country. That's what Cowra High School looks like, and many other high schools were simply, regardless of where they were, what the climate was, simply that was the format for a school. You just put down as many as you needed. I think that's one. Also, there's the economy of construction. Of very often to add sort of detail to a building, which might be environmental, but it might be aesthetic, it might be anything, requires extra funding. And so it's far better to have, in this case, a window that doesn't open, because it's certainly cheaper to install simply a pane of glass rather than going through the problem of putting locks and all sorts and hinges and all those sorts of things onto it. So when you're looking at the cost of constructing a building, certainly just going with the barest minimum of additional things is going to be much cheaper. I think there's also the sense that it is aesthetically more pleasing. And especially if you look in the city with high-rise buildings that are all made of glass, it's certainly nicer for the people who are inside just to have nothing but glass on the outside, so they have expansive views of whatever floor they're on, looking out over the city. And also for the architect who doesn't want their design, their facade, sort of broken up by has some people having their windows open, full, some half, some shut, so it actually breaks up the surface of the building and doesn't look sort of what the architect wanted it to look like. So it's a very sort of complex thing, but I think, you know, if you look at those three things, that it's cheaper and it costs less, and that when we lost the idea that it should be designed for the individual space, and also that there is an aesthetic thing, that sometimes it's very much nicer to have the idea that this building will always look the same.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Andrew. Anyone else want to come in on that one?
Would just say I think that there's also an element of understanding that shifts, that a home moves from being a practical, functional space to being an expression of someone's personality. And so when it starts to become tied up with issues of personality, then you start to get issues of social positioning and displaying wealth and displaying taste and displaying your position in a society through your home. And that, by necessity, becomes about sometimes about ostentation, about adding and getting bigger and bigger and more wealthy. And so it becomes a statement about what your ideas are, what your beliefs are, what your personality is, and moves away from being a functional building. And that, I think, probably that change in position in terms of Australian society getting richer and wealthier, the reason why we have homes slightly changed, I think, and that would also, I think, have an impact on moving towards homes that are bigger and more extravagant and more kind of over the top.
Okay. All right, just this question is for you as well. Built for the Bush tends to comprise a bit of a utopian ideal that we're going to ultimately sort of fix the things that we've done to our planet by starting with architecture and taking it back to a bare minimum. Is it possible? Have we done too much damage?
I don't think it's, I mean, that's, I know I'm one little person, but I think it's, I don't think it is unfixable. And I think architecture is probably a fantastic way to put into practice the ideas of sustainability that we then can filter into other areas of our life, because the issues that come out in Built for the Bush are not just about economic and environmental sustainability. They're about a sustainability of a way of life, that you're getting people to slow down and take their time with things and make far more conscious decisions about the way they're going to live their life, where they're going to find their food, where they're going to find their energy, and also changing the family dynamic slightly so that people are spending more time with one another rather than in 10 different rooms spread out over a big home. So I think in a lot of ways, sustainable architecture is a really great model for putting into practice some of these bigger ideas about sustainable issues across a range of kind of sectors, and giving it kind of tangible, practical examples for people to look at so they can actually see, yes, this house is cooler, or yes, this house was cheaper to build, or yes, this house uses less water, and starting to think about how just small changes in our daily routines can have a big knock-on effect in other areas.
All right, Kent, thinking about or moving away from the sustainable concepts presented in this exhibition, they also emphasise a sense of place and identity as being really important in these contemporary designs. How important is it to interact with the landscape in designing a building, particularly in rural Australia?
Well, I think it's incredibly important, and I think this is where the comment about it not being a recent concept, but a recently lost concept. I think if you look at architecture, particularly in the bush, there's a very pragmatic way that buildings were created in that environment, because people were so conscious of the environment. And invariably, many times that you see, grand designs or shows that show kind of large projects, architectural projects, often those houses are in right within the environment, rather than sort of in a city block necessarily, you know, surrounded by concrete. So I think we have, certainly in rural areas, we have the opportunity to live in the landscape, learn from it, and hopefully try to apply that into buildings. If you look, for example, at a place like Dundalamore, a property which has really had really smart thinking in its construction, and could only have really happened in this environment. And I think that that's something that, as people living in the environment, we start to think about that a lot more. Most definitely when people talk about a house, they sort of ask, is it north-facing? You know, which immediately is an understanding of the environment and how that impacts upon our lives. So I think it's part of what we think about, but either through financial situation or just, I suppose, getting on the treadmill in terms of making a building a house or buying a house, we tend to feel like we don't have a lot of control over things. So we may go to an organisation that builds houses. There, you know, one or two different designs that we can choose from. It's easy, it's quick, it's cheap, etc. Whereas increasingly, to be able to create buildings that have a sustainable aspect to them, as well as incorporating a kind of understanding of the environment, is becoming increasingly cheaper. I think the rise of sustainable thinking, of course, allows manufacturers, etc., to be creative about what they do and the materials they're using. And so I think certainly it's been more expensive to be able to use sustainable materials, but I think it's definitely coming down, and we will see people paying a lot more attention to the environment as well as their hip pocket in terms of how much it costs to run a house.
Yeah, I think that's all true, and I think it's also people are becoming much more conscious, I suppose, of the on costs of running things, and that we're starting to move away from let's just build it as cheap as we can to looking, well, I'm going to be in this house for maybe 20, 30 years. I'm going to divide the cost of doing that. And if you can say, well, it's going to cost me $2,000 every winter to heat it, as opposed to $500 every winter, then you can start to think, well, you know, that's a fairly substantial saving that I'm going to make, and it's worth investing in that. And I think that has been, that sort of long-term approach has been a, I suppose, a critical success of the environmental movement in getting people to think about the long term.
Absolutely. Having personal experience in building a house, I was one of the people who just went with a standard package, like so many other people do, and so many other homes in similar estates that I'm building, they all look the same. Mm-hmm. So until it filters down into standard building practices, you know, the everyday home builder sort of isn't factoring these things in. I know now I'm trying to put, we're looking into putting solar panels on, so it's sort of the cost of doing it after the fact rather than doing it initially. So,
and I mean, in many ways, you know, none of us would even consider thinking that we could build a car. That is a specialised thing that an organisation, you know, the industry does. And so for many of us, we think, oh, well, there's no way that we could design a house or any of that sort of thing. And, of course, a lot of people do, and there is the opportunity to do that. And I suppose it is about shifting your thinking from maybe putting in your budget, air conditioning, etc. Maybe that money can go into, you know, better insulation, so you don't need those kind of those energy absorbing expensive things to run.
Yep. Okay, to finish off, some of the material that comes with the exhibition provides some quite scary statistics. In particular, by the mid-2030s, we'll be consuming the Earth's renewable resources at twice the rate that they can be regenerated. So in your opinion, just to close off, what is the most crucial sustainable feature which should be incorporated into all homes right now?
I think it depends on where you live. Certainly in rural Australia, regional Australia, it's going to have to be water. It's about making sure that you know, every drop that can otherwise be wasted, you know, running down the street, actually makes it in, you know, to your home to be used in some particular facet, whether it's for watering your garden, which is going to be obviously a low water garden, but, you know, or flushing toilets or doing all sorts of things, and that, you know, the water that is taken from the rivers or taken from other places and treated and then pumped out at great cost is used just for drinking.
I think there's also a lot more sort of serious attention that can be got, that can be put into building homes that are better use the light better. I mean, I suppose for me, one of the things that I've always found kind of shocking is the disappearance of the veranda from contemporary Australian architecture, and it plays such a vital role in cooling a house, in protecting it in such harsh summers that we have in Australia. And you have houses being built with such tiny eaves that provide no real kind of protection, and then people put in 3 or 4 air conditioners. Mm. And it just seems to me that a little bit more time spent on the kind of design stages, no great additional cost to the overall construction cost, and you have a far more sustainable home in terms of energy use. So it's not so much about saying that every home has to have a veranda, but it's more about, as Kent was saying, making sure that the architecture and the design relates to the landscape that the house is going to be situated in.
Yeah, I think we really do need to start looking at the nuts and bolts of what it costs to run a house and examine other ways of achieving the same results. I think power obviously is a huge issue for most people, given the increases in electricity, etc. Definitely, Dubbo, you know, as a community, is has really jumped in with solar, and I think it makes sense to make use of our environment in that regard, either through solar, through wind, etc. There's a tremendous amount of opportunity for us to think about the sources of energy and how we tap into that energy, but also how that energy is used within a home. So, you know, in many ways, being able to build a house and not require machines, etc., that need that constant energy, i.e., you know, heating and cooling, etc., that we can at least reduce our use of energy in a number of different ways.
All right. Any other comments anyone would like to make on the exhibition?
No, I think those people who do come and see it, it's a good, I suppose, given the nature of it, it's a good old-fashioned exhibition. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of things to read, really nicely laid out in information. You know, some of the great sort of modern architecture of this country, you know, the greatest architects that are still currently operating are all featured, and it's a really interesting and thought-provoking sort of half an hour you can spend there.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a tremendous amount that people can learn about, even just their own homes that they're living in now. As someone who's lived in a weatherboard house as well as a brick house is much colder in winter. Why is that? What can we do to change that? So I think, you know, we can all, in many respects, look at our own homes. Clearly they're already built, so there's not a lot that we can do in terms of their construction, but we can think about the ways that we utilise power, light, etc., to essentially make use of the environment that we live in to its best.
You need a winter palace. That's what you need. That's somewhere weatherboard to move into. Summer home.
All right. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.